too sick to get out of bed, I knew I was doomed. Every February, in the death grip of winter, Interlochen Arts Academy would suspend its regular classes for a week of what they called open curriculum. 5,000 light years from Birdland, but I'm still preaching the rhythm. Long gone up tight years from Birdland, and I'm still teaching the rhythm. Teachers would offer non-academic classes on crafts or the fun aspects of mathematics, and there are some, or whatever, and the students and staff would get a break from the grueling schedule at a time when everything seemed bleakest. It was a great idea and helped everyone get over that awful hump between Christmas and spring break. Perversely, my mom would often offer a class on baking luscious desserts, which was always well attended by the dancers in her charge. Every other week of the year, she'd lecture them on staying slim and check their weights and write them down in her chart of doom. And now here she was offering slabs of chocolate smothered in clouds of whipped cream and shot through with butter, which they were only too happy to consume. But then they'd have to run back to the dorm and stick their fingers down their throat so they could pass next week's weigh-in. Each year would also see some brave teacher or two taking a bunch of hopped-up high school students who were going a little cabin crazy on a trip somewhere. One year, the drama teacher took a bunch of drama students to New York City. I don't know what the hell she was thinking. First of all, taking a bunch of adolescent actors anywhere is a really bad idea, but lifting them out of the frozen wonderland of Interlochen and dropping them into the middle of the most intense city in the country for a week is a suicidal mission. But everybody came back, so I guess it went well. Interlochen was, and still is, known for its strong faculty in both the academics and the arts, but there were a few legendary teachers that everybody tried to experience. Mr. Dean, an intense and charismatic social studies teacher who had the gift of making whatever arcane subject you were studying, Thomas Aquinas, the Battle at Antietam, seem urgently entertaining, was one of the more popular. During the spring of my last year, Eric and Bob and I got up at like 5 in the morning one weekend day so we could go get in line and sign up for the next round of social studies classes. We wanted to be sure to secure a spot in his wildly popular Civil War class. We got to the Social Studies Rotunda 3 hours before registration started, and there was already a line of people camped out on the cold tile floor of the concourse. If you got there after 7 a.m., a full 2 hours before registration started, you'd have to pick some other course, because all 3 classes of Civil War were already filled. They call it wacky dust. It's from a hot cornet. It gives your feet a feeling so breezy. People also fought tooth and nail to get into a class taught by Mr. Hintz, a quiet, bookish professor of literature, whose specialty was British literature, Britlit, and who, every other year, taught a class on Shakespeare that the drama geeks would go nuts for. In many ways, he was the opposite of Mr. Dean. Mr. Hintz's quiet, piercing intelligence and obvious love for his subject were contagious, and caused 16-year-olds to gleefully leap into the thorny thickets of Eliot and Joyce. I often skipped lunch so I could stay after class and talk to him some more. Math teacher Hugo Trepti personified the mad mathematician stereotype, with hair akimbo and enthusiasm for the arcana of numbers and systems pouring out of him. Goofy in the extreme, especially to cool, conscious high school students, his love of all things mathematical was so winning that even the most jaded jazz student would suddenly be glowing with intensity as they worked to unravel the mysteries of Pythagoras.
Oh, we don't know just why it gets you so high, putting a buzz in your heart. You'll do a marathon, you wanna go on, kick in the ceiling apart.
And in the science department, Mr. Chamberlain was untouchable. He taught but one class, ecology, but it was a subject he lived and breathed. He even wrote the textbook for the class. Although there was some time spent in the classroom discussing the life cycle of forests or the importance of the water table, most of the class time would be spent out in the woods, exploring trees and birds and following scat trails and eating grubs and really getting to know the natural world on its own terms. Every student who was lucky enough to get into that class left with a profound and lifelong appreciation of all things natural. So when he offered a week-long open curriculum trip to the Okefenokee Swamp, I leapt at the chance.
Nightingale sang in Berkeley Square.
Unfortunately, when it came time for the last planning meeting, I was too sick to go. I knew that Canoe and Tent Partners were to be chosen at that meeting, and I also knew that by not being there, I would end up with the worst partner and would probably be elected president as well.
That when you turned and smiled at me.
Sure enough, at the meeting, it was decided that my partner would be the percussion teacher, Mr. Schneller, who had agreed to come along to help chaperone. Not that he was so bad, really, but he was slow and he snored incredibly loudly, didn't get one decent night of sleep that week. And because he was always the last one ready in the morning, what's the rush? We'd always get stuck with the scraw bucket. The Okefenokee Swamp is just that, hundreds of miles of swamp stretching across southern Georgia and northern Florida. Being a swamp, there's no place to land, so the Southern Canal Recreation Association built occasional, very occasional, wooden platforms to camp out on. And they also supplied each group with a large yellow bucket emblazoned with their initials to be used as a human waste receptacle. A shit bucket, in other words. And because we were always the last canoe to leave the platform in the morning, we always got to be keepers of the scraw bucket. In his defense, Schneller had a lot to put up with. In order to get to the swamp, we had to drive from Michigan, northern Michigan, thank you very much, to Georgia, that's southern Georgia, in 2 days.
Shilly, shilly, poke, billy.
We took two vans and put CB radios in each, so we could communicate with each other on the trip. Schneller's van, for whatever reason, he's one of those people who just gets known by their last name, was green and we needed a handle to use on the radio, so he chose Copper Kettle, in honor of the timpani, and Mr. Chamberlain, driving a yellow van, chose the name Solar Roller. This simple act of naming his van the Solar Roller opened a gigantic, unforeseen, and really unforeseeable, can of worms. Once on the road, we decided to start playing Hinky Pinky over the CBs. For those unfamiliar with the game, one person, or in this case, team, would come up with a pair of rhyming words, fat cat, and then give synonymous clues, portly feline. In order to give the guessers an additional clue, you tell them how many syllables each word has. So you'd say, I've got a hink pink for fluffy pussy, and they'd know each word had one syllable. Or, You could say, I have a hinkity pinkity for frozen velocipede. And they'd have to come up with icicle bicycle. Or you could mix them up and give somebody a hinkadiddle pinkity for ballerina's virginity. And then they'd have to come up with Kate Cadenhead's maidenhead. Anyway, it's an entertaining game to play for a few minutes to pass the time. We played it for just about 17 hours straight, pretty much the entire trip down to Georgia. How either Schneller or Mr. Chamberlain kept from driving headlong into a semi just to end the game is something I'll never know. That alone should overshadow all the snoring and scrawying, but it didn't.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet you're gonna regret, because I'm the best as ever been. Johnny, rosin up your bow and play your fiddle hard, cause hell's broke loose in Georgia and the devil deals the cards. And if you win, you get this shiny fiddle made of gold, but if you lose, the devil gets your soul.
Many of us, myself included, were laboring under the false assumption that because we were going to Florida, it was going to be warm and sunny. In fact, that was half of the appeal of the trip. I think it maybe hit 50 degrees one day, but that was certainly the high for the trip. It was so cold the entire time that nobody changed clothes or even took off their coats and hats. By the time we got back, I realized that I had been wearing my woolen winter hat for over a week without ever taking it off. And I wasn't alone. Nobody bathed or changed for the entire experience, which made the 17-hour trip back especially pungent. When we finally got back, I took the most wonderful shower of my entire life, blissfully letting the warmth flow over me until the hot water heater was empty. Which isn't to say that the trip wasn't fun. It was a remarkable experience canoeing around those primordial waters for so many days. The creatures were pretty scarce, as most of them were reptiles and wouldn't be caught dead out and about in such cold weather. But there was one moment when Mr. Chamberlain motioned us to paddle quietly over to where his canoe was. Next to the canoe, lying perfectly still, was an alligator. We marveled at it and whispered about it for a few minutes before Mr. Chamberlain decided the alligator must be dead because he wasn't moving. So Mr. Ecology took his canoe paddle and whacked the alligator on the head. Well, it turned out the alligator wasn't dead at all. He was just resting and trying to soak up a little warmth there was. And he thrashed around so hard that Mr. Chamberlain was knocked back into the canoe, fortunately. Shakily steadying himself, he grinned sheepishly and recommended that we should probably just leave him alone before paddling off.
Long ago and far away, in a different age, when I was a dumb young guy, I fossilized photos of my life and illustrate what an easy prey I must have.
Schneller and I weren't getting along particularly well, and it blew up on our last night when I couldn't stand his snoring anymore and started pummeling him to get him to shut up. He woke up and yelled at me, and I yelled back, and you could hear muffled giggles coming out of the other tents and drifting across the inky swamp. But But for all his foibles and irritants, he did one thing on that trip that I am especially grateful for. He played a tape of the new Manhattan Transfer album, Extensions. I knew a little bit about them, but they never really appealed to me, jazz not being my particular cup of noise. But this was something different. A lot of the numbers had a shiny production sheen to them, and some sounded downright new wave, especially the transplendent Cuckoo You.
They say it's a fact that your head is cracked. I think now you are loco. You have blown your stack, you're a maniac. I think now you are loco. I just heard the news that you blew a fuse. I think now you are loco. You're a paranoid and your head's a void. I think now you are loco.
Look in the mirror.
I also liked Birdland and was particularly intrigued by the closing number. A beautiful a cappella version of an old Tom Waits song that was filled with strange harmonies and even stranger lyrics.
When traveling abroad in the continental style, it's my belief one must attempt to be discreet and subsequently bear in mind your transient position allows you a perspective that's unique.
I was intrigued enough to buy the album when I got home and fell in love with it. Only the angular Body and Soul failed to delight me as I pored over the arrangements and wonderful singing.
Your wanderlust won't let you settle down, and you'll wonder how you ever fathom that you'd be content to stay within the city limits of a small Midwestern town. Most vagabonds I know.
Like some other musicians, Ministry, Cabaret Voltaire, the one album of theirs I like the best is the one they hate the most, and that seemed to be the case with Extensions, which, despite some popularity, disappeared from their catalog for years. They were probably embarrassed by the new wavy likes of Cuckoo You, but I love the vocoded vocals and the plodding synthesizer lines. But don't be fooled. If you think this is great, then don't bother running out and buying other Manhattan Transfer albums. They sound nothing like this. But if you hate it, then by all means, you found a good group and should invest in their back catalog.
Without fear of contradiction, Bon Voyage is always smaller in conjunction with a handkerchief from shore by a girl that drives a rambler and furthermore is overly concerned that she won't see him anymore.
Planes and trains and boats and buses characteristically evoke a common attitude of blue, unless you have a suitcase
and a ticket
and a passport, and the cargo that they're carrying is you.
A foreign affair,
juxtaposed with the stateside and domestically approved romantic fancy, is mysteriously attractive due to circumstances knowing it will only be parlayed into a man.